Schön in der Update. Bringing you the latest technology, you're tuned into Update. So, thanks again for joining me. You've got the wonderful Anthony Blomfield and the show's Update. And I'll be updating you with all the latest in tech and taking on deep technology matters and answering any questions you have or choosing to talk about particular technology subjects. So, so that's quite exciting. So any topics you want me to go into? So, ladies and gentlemen, Update website again is update.chat. You can send messages to me there. Also, you can email me at chat@update.chat. Right, so, that's Anthony Blomfield, and today we've got another sunny, beautiful day, and we're going to have a great show this morning, and we're going to be delving into the electronics world. So hold that, let your friends know if they're interested in the science of electronics, and we're going to get into lots of, some pretty cool stuff. And, once again, don't forget, let your friends know if you're interested in technology. The other previous podcasts are now on also planetaudio.org.nz /update. And you can hear those amazing things and you can fast forward the boring bits. so that's pretty much it. So let's start with the news of the day, shall we? Right, again, so we got the tech news for this lovely 3rd of October, my goodness me, and 2020, it's amazing, isn't it? So I should have that sort of professional news voice now, shouldn't I? Google Pixel's designed a new phone for the economic downturn. That's not that exciting. What we've got, which is interesting, is Rocket Lab is about to send out 15 CubeSats for their client Canon this month, in the next week or two. And what they have doing is Canon has got a customer called you don't really need to know who they are, but Canon has putting in Super Dove satellites, which is a imaging technology in close Earth orbit. They'll be able to have very high resolution of Earth, and Rocket Lab's about to send 15 of these satellites in to a what's called a synchronous orbit with the sun, so that they've always got power from the sun spinning around the Earth, and they'll be taking high resolution and multiple bandwidth imagery of Earth. So that's happening. We've got staying with tech news and rockets is SpaceX is about to send its second crew to the International Space Station this month. And in fact, they've already been doing mock trials, in other words, running through the countdown and simulations to make sure they're all ready. And so that's a second crew that SpaceX is about to send to International Space Station. We'll apparently be seeing some big improvements already to their, what they call their Dragon spaceship, which is the actual little thing that sits on top of the rocket. Yeah. So we've got, yeah, so lots with TikTok again, still in the news with old Trump trying to stop them. Apple still battling Fortnite to see if they're going to be able to stay on the tech news, stay on the Apple Store. Looks like Apple are winning that. Yeah, and all the rest of the tech news is to be honest, sort of the same. So let's get into my much more interesting topic for the day, people. So, yep, thanks again. Right, so yep, Anthony, update, a thing, show about all things technology, and it's going to be a great show this morning, and on this lovely peaceful Saturday, I hope you're just having your big latte or cooking up your eggs Benedict, and then roll on through the radio channels, hoping to get your intellectual hit for the day, the big heavyweights, and not politics, no, not COVID, technology. So isn't that more fun? So yep, tune in, please tell your friends, Twitter or Skype them, and so yep, so let's get straight into the show, which is going to be about electronics, people. Right, so I know we all kind of know that we don't know about electronics, and I know as sort of the modern world, most of us sort of understand computers and software, but I don't think, my experience, most of us understand electronics, the actual hardware or the bread and butter of what makes all this stuff work. So I thought in 1 hour, I'm going to give you all 3 years of, not quite, I'll give you first year of Auckland University electronic theory in an hour. So get yourself comfortable and I'll go pretty quickly. And hopefully you'll all be geniuses in the electronic world after this 1 hour show. So again, you can get this on planetaudio.org.nz/update if you miss it. You want to hear it again. So here we go. So electronics, people. So we all kind of understand what that is. We all sort of understand that that's the thing inside all these appliances that we don't really touch, and we know that it doesn't work if smoke comes out, and we know if something breaks we spend a lot of money for someone to say that a part needs replaced, because we don't really mean the electronics so much these days. Okay, so you ready? Here we go. I'm about to, in 3, 2, 1, get straight into it. 3, 2, 1. Electronics, people. Electronic theory. So the big thing to know, and this is going to be Anthony's version of education, is there's two fields of electronics. There's analog and there's digital. And I think if we fundamentally understand that there's two parallel lines of electronics, that will put our minds to rest. And because lots of terms in electronics gets interwoven and people get confused. So there's an analog area of electronics and there's a digital. And they're quite different kinds of electronics. The one is sort of, well, the first predates digital, was the analog electronics. And just because it predated it doesn't mean that it's not used still. So analog electronics is sort of your Thomas Edison, Bell Labs, and then your digital electronics is all when after the invention really of the transistor, and that's your zeros and ones off and on. Okay, so let's start with the analog. Okay, so obviously, you know, the invention of electricity goes way back. Well, the most obvious electronic circuit that we all know, which is analog, is your light bulb. So that's pretty simple, isn't it? So nothing that magic. We probably all understand how that works. But yeah, so analog, your light bulb. The other one, of course, is the speakers you're listening to me on right now. Those speakers have a little cone that's vibrating in and out, sound of my lovely voice, and that is also an analog signal, analog electronics to run those speakers. The next thing would be actually generally your radio. So, not an actual truth now, but in technically most radios, so you're picking up the frequency from this radio channel, that's an analog electronic kit. In other words, it effectively is a circuit that does one thing, and it uses variable voltage and current to do what it needs to do, in this case, tune into the radio. So obviously all these things, the sort of the older electronics, so this is one of the most common ones, the first electronics that people would have got used to in their home was after the gramophone, which is just a normal record player in the house, and all record buffs would understand this. There's a little needle on your record that vibrates up and down in the grooves of the record. And that little vibration, okay, so it's a little, you know, a little needle on that record. That vibration goes, there's a tiny little needle, by the way, that's inside a little coil. And the needle is magnetized, and the coil, as soon as that little vibrating pin goes up and down, creates a little oscillating or moderating circuit. And that tiny little voltage then goes all the way down to the record player, where it runs through the first record player is through what was called valves, and then also through capacitors, and then it amplifies the signal, and then it's through the speaker. So that's your analog again. Okay, so what it is this concept, and I was thinking about this last night, how to say it, is the concept of electricity. Here's a thing that might surprise you all. A lot of people think that scientists know stuff. and I think I'd like for us to start being updated by thinking this is the way scientists understand it, and this is the current agreed mechanical theory, and that's the idea that electrons run around a wire, and that effectively the force of the electrons we call the voltage, and effectively how many electrons we call the current. And really, in layman's terms, all we're really thinking is the amount of power that runs through a little wire in an analog circuit that can be either boosted or reduced. And those two things effectively give us most of sort of your early, you know, 19th century, 20th century electronics, your radios, even your TVs were analog, CRT TVs, or your music stuff back in the sort of 70s and 80s was all analog. Your electric guitar, that's an analog. And then obviously the digital really took off sort of really 80s, 90s, and then now it's pretty ubiquitous. Right, so let's stay with electronic analog theory again. So what are the parts of electronics? So we can get some terms out so that you sort of know this is where they fit. So the boring thing is, in analog electronics, and I wish we didn't have to be boring, but it is a bit, is that there's not many components. There's not many building blocks to an analog circuit. All we really have is the wire, a resistor. So a resistor is literally just something that doesn't like electricity going through it. And we have what's called a capacitor. And all a capacitor is, literally, people, is a short-term battery, really. You can think of it as something that effectively charges or becomes charged with the power, and then releases the power. Okay, so that's what's called a capacitor. You have what's called an inductor, and an inductor is, so physically what it is a big block of iron, a bar of iron, if you will, and a coil around that iron. Okay, and what the property of that is that as electricity goes through the coil, it creates what's called a magnetic field in the metal bar, which doesn't like electricity coming in, so it sort of impedes the electricity to come in, and it does so in quite an unusual way. It creates what's called a resonance. So you, yeah, it's the three components. You've got your capacitor, your resistor, you've got your inductor, and then staying with the analog, we have a transformer. Okay, transformer is basically a device, people, that will allow one amount of power to change into a different kind of power. Okay, so we're really used to this when we charge our phone or any little thing you plug in the wall to charge. What that does is transform the power in the wall from 240 volts, normally down to like 12 volts, right? So you've got a battery charger, electric toothbrush, anything. That's what's called a transformer, and that effectively takes the power and changes it up or down. Okay, so that's another little part. In analog electronics, you also have a diode, and a diode effectively likes electricity just to go through it one way. Right. Now, that's from my sort of understanding, that's it. You could also technically say what's called a relay, because I guess this is still pretty common in the old days. A relay is literally just, you know what? No, relay isn't technically part of real electronics. It's more mechanical, so no, stay away from that. So, yeah, so there was capacitor, resistor, inductor, diode, transformer. And that is, think of it as a kid when you've got all your Lego. Those ingredients, almost like Gordon Ramsay with four ingredients can make any meal he wants, with those like six ingredients, you can pretty much make almost any single electronic device known to man pre the digital world. Okay, so that's your TVs, your even original satellites floating through space had analog transmission for transmitting Bell Labs signals through space. Isn't that cool? So, yeah. Now, excuse me. So, yeah. So that's, just had to cough. So that's your electronics and your analog. All right, and so the theory is that, yeah, those components can be put together in different ways. I mean, the first circuit that hobbyists make is a what's called a flashing light bulb, or LED, and that is where they use a little capacitor in some circuitry with resistors and stuff, and it allows you to make a little light bulb that goes on, off, by simply using the properties of a capacitor to be charged and then not charged and then charged and not charged. And so if you design the values of all those ingredients to be correct, then you'll get a light bulb to flash on and off. Similar, you could, yeah, so that's effectively your analog circuitry there. I should really include, I guess, a valve in the analog world as well, which is, we all sort of know that's those big sort of light bulby things that sort of glow inside the old grandmother's stereo radiogram. And that what it is that is a really what's really an analog booster. In other words, power comes in one way. It's joined with some extra power from another wire. It sort of joins those wires and it sends it out. And so traditionally how this would work, let's say you had your radiogram with your record player on it. So you've got your little needle pulsing around on the record, creating a little microcurrent, you know, a little tiny bit of electricity going wobble, wobble, wobble to the sound of the record. And then you had a valve. And then, so one wire was that little microcircuit, and the next wire was big fat electricity, let's say from a 12-volt battery. And what that big electricity would do was to join to that tiny little wave, and then it would boost that. So that's amplification. So, yeah, that's your real primitive analog circuitry. In fact, that very circuit was the reason for the design of the valve and later the transistor through Bell Labs, because the original electronics, really, people, was Bell Labs, which is Thomas Edison's. But Bell Labs was effectively America's, telephone system, probably 100 years ago, I think now, 1930s or whatever it was, 1940s, that had to send people's voice all the way across the states of America. And it got to the point where you would shout into a microphone and that microphone just couldn't send that signal all the way around America, because it would just, the wire would eventually just reduce that signal down. No one could hear the other person speak. So the valve was this idea that every 100 kilometres there would be a little phone exchange. There'd be these little valves with some 12-volt batteries, effectively, and they would boost that signal up again and it would keep going to the next person. And there was, quite frankly, I think something like 100,000 valves involved in every single conversation across the states. So in other words, to boost the quality up, Bell used, hundreds of thousands of these valves. So your signal would effectively bounce through America, and one exchange would have, 100,000 of these valves, and you would go through 10 of them to get your signal up and then keep going. Yeah. So that's your valves. That's your analog. Okay. I think we kind of understand that now. So this is this is your old school electronics. Okay. Right. And all appliances still use analog electronics. And where that is, by the way, as I go into this, is pretty much every appliance has its own power management circuit board or stage. Remember how I talked about the transformer? So all electronic appliances generally have a transformer in them, even if there's another one at the wall. And then there's a whole lot of what's called protection circuitry. So this is like lots of resistors, diodes. Then there's most appliances that you'd use, and anyone who's opened a computer would know this. There's a big box called the power supply, and we stick our 240-volt kettle jack lead in the back. But if you open a computer and you see the power box, the wires coming out of that power box, there's like 30 wires, because a computer doesn't use just one voltage, so there's lots of voltages, just what the machine needs. And so all appliances do that. So your TV, it has a power management circuitry in there. And one wire would, for example, would look after the little onboard computer. One wire would look after the tuning. One wire would look after the on-off state. One wire would look after the circuitry. And so power management is all analog. Okay? There you go. Okay. Well, involves analog. So that's your analog, and I'll come back to that because there's more fun things we can do with that. And then let's jump a little bit into your digital circuitry. Okay, so almost feel like I need a sting for that. That's okay. That's right. So, yes, your digital circuitry. That is what we use today. I'm just going to cough, excuse me. So digital circuitry is what we're sort of used to. This is your computers. This is your modern appliance. All right. And that in a way is simpler in its raw ingredients to a analog circuit. But it's... by levels of extraction, it becomes a lot more complex. So the magic ingredient, of course, to a digital circuit is your transistor. Okay. So just like the valve we talked about earlier in the analog, which Bell Labs invented to boost signal. Okay. So many people probably realize the original computers, Enoch, I think it's called, used valves to do the computing. And so what they were doing with the valve, which was technically an analog piece of invention, is they were changing the property slightly to something quite basic. And the basic property they were changing is that they, instead of allowing it to boost signal, like we talked about, so your audio goes loud and then soft, they were simply using it to stop audio or let it go. So think of it as sort of like your, think of it like an amplifying signal, but in to infinity. So it would, well, negative infinity. So in other words, it would get a little signal through and the valve would say, no, not going to boost you at all. Stop. So no boost, zero. And that would be called an off. And then they could also allow the valve to say, okay, actually, I'll allow you to be boosted. But it never boosted it. It literally just let the signal pass through it. Okay, so that was the original valve. That's why you had what's called leakage and things like this and weird things. But because they weren't perfect, but effectively, electricity would come in to the valve one side. And dependent if there was electricity in the booster side, it would either allow that signal to carry on through the valve. And that, what was termed a gate, just like your farm gate, farmers. Maybe I've got some farmers listening to me. Just like when you let the sheep in, the sheep out through a gate, the valve was an electronic gate. In computer theory, we're all used to these, you know, gates, flip-flops and gates. So, after they realized how inefficient valves were because they were hot and glowing, when Bell Labs, again, innovated in that world, and they thought, we don't want valves, they're too hot, they're too big, and they even break because they're made of glass. They invented the transistor, and actually I should really know the name for that. I'll bring it back up in a sec. John Bardeen, William Shockley, Bell Labs, 1948. There you go. So he... and there's a mention, Walter Hauser, Britain. So three of them. So they, when they invented the little transistor, which was a tiny little bit of germanium crystal, that was really just the same as a valve, but it was just more accurate. In other words, if power was coming through one wire and there was no wire power through another wire, the third wire simply wouldn't receive electricity. And conversely, if two wires had electricity, then the third one would as well. All right. So this got through... a little bit of fun history lesson for you people. So once they'd made that transistor, Bell Labs obviously almost had a monopoly on it, and that was expensive. And the American government said, we've got this brilliant invention. And they were expensive, the transistors in the early days. And they were sort of controlled by the government of America. And there was not a ubiquitous amount of manufacturers at that time making them. And the supplies were generally held... I believe only for government contracts, and it was considered sort of a military technology, so that they weren't effectively just exported for everybody. They were kept for a wealthy military industrial complex, if you will. And so what actually happened is Sony got in by saying, they sort of got some deal, which was quite interesting, and effectively said, well, look, we won't sell any of our transistors to these big, you know, bomb makers. We're just going to sell them to consumers. And I don't think sort of Bell realised that there was so much potential in there. So it's actually Sony that sort of made them cheap and easy to use for everybody, because they just looked after consumers and they improved them a lot. And then, of course, you know, the famous Sony Walkman was sort of the first big hit of all things transistor. Anyway, so yeah, so that's your transistor. That was your input-output. And that's a gate, okay? So this is digital circuits. That single little thing, isn't that ridiculous? That little thing with two wires in, one wire out, that is your bread and butter almost on its own. That one thing is used for almost all digital circuitry. There isn't many more components in a digital circuitry than that. That one thing with three wires. Yeah, so I think that's insane, really, in a way, that pretty much all modern electronics just uses that one transistor in different patterns, different ways, myriad of ways. And that's so let me remind you what digital circuitry is. So, yeah, again, so that's obviously a computer, so we know that. But now, your radio, instead of effectively tuning in to 104.6 FM through what's called a variable capacitor and inductor, like they did in the old days, it just uses a whole lot of transistors to effectively work out the signal where it's coming from and turn it into a sine wave. All modern music is digital, so your CD, your flash drives, pretty much all that is, well, on your flash drive, of course, it's a lot of transistors. Your what's called a digital to analog converter is mostly transistors. And yeah, there's not much that isn't really digital now. That's what does all the smarts in electronics. Now, there is a couple more components that make digital circuitry more magical than we probably appreciate, and that is, ironically, one is what's called a crystal. And there's not many people sort of know this, but just like your overpriced crystal on your ring, that is normally, let's say it's a diamond, okay? So in all computers is generally a tiny crystal, not too dissimilar to a crystal you'd see in jewellery, okay? So just think of that little, you know, think of a ruby or whatever it is. But in computers, it's, you know, it's smaller than the size of a pinhead. And it is normally made out of germanium or quartz in the original ones. So let's say quartz crystal. And the property of those of a crystal and electron and digital circuitry is it has a oscillation. So another word for that is vibration. Crystals and electronics literally expand and contract at thousands of megahertz a second. This is when modern computers, you get the word, you know, I've got a 2.4 gigahertz computer. So that's literally a tiny little crystal, and not too similar to your crystal on your ring. And it's on a circuit board, and it is effectively vibrating, bigger and smaller. Hello. And it's doing that at 2.4 gigahertz a second. What's that? Normal language, that's 2.4 gigahertz. So it's something like 240 billion cycles a second. We'll go with that. I'll Wikipedia it. So let's say, just to give me some safeness, let's say it's 2.4 million vibrations in 1 second. That's a pretty, I mean, you think about that. I mean, how many times could you bounce a soccer ball or a basketball in a second? You know, if you're really fast, maybe 3, okay? How fast could you, you know, swing your cat in your room in 1 second, you know? Maybe 6 times, you know? How fast could your spin a car wheel on a drag race in 1 second, you know? Maybe 100. That's primitive. This crystal vibrates at millions of vibrations 1 second. It's like, 1 second, whoa, missed that. Yeah, oh, okay, it was just vibrating. So that is a what a crystal is, and that, when a crystal vibrates, every time it vibrates, it either becomes a conductor, well, conductive, or insulating. So that's quite amazing as well. So your crystal will effectively allow electricity to go through it and then not allow it to go through it. And then it will allow it to go through it and then it won't allow it to go through it. And it will allow it to go through it and it won't allow it to go through it. And it will allow it to go through it. And then we start to realize, what have we got there? We've got a binary circuit. We've got a binary pulse. So the miracle of your circuitry, really, in modern days, is the crystal is pulsing power, ones and zeros, as we say, at millions of times a second. And so that's sort of your miracle, magical ingredient. And actually, New Zealand makes these crystals, believe it or not, for GPS. Anyway, so these little things are pulsing through. And how they pulse, how you pulse a crystal is very simple. When on one axis or dimension, if you put a voltage through them, they pulse, and that will allow on the other axis for the electricity to flow. So you put top to bottom power, it vibrates. So it's ridiculously simple. Yeah, that's what gets you what we call square wave, or your zeros and ones, or your dot, you know, on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off. And that's what drives like what we call a clock cycle inside a computer. So many people would know what CPU is, central processing unit, and most of us understand what that's called, a clock. People don't really understand what a clock is. A clock is literally that crystal, okay? Because it's accurate. It doesn't, because it's resonance, it's perfect. It's effectively, every time it vibrates, the same. So it's a consistent 1-0, 1-0, 1-0. It does it in a cool. So yeah, that's your clock cycle. And you got your transistors in the digital circuitry. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Hang on. Yeah, not really. technically, yes, you have diodes, but then so transistors are pretty much that. But yeah, so it lets the power in and off. Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Right. So digital circuitry is, will lead me into another subject for computer science, which is, you know, how does RAM work and how does, you know, how do flip-flops work and all that. That's more fun. But for today, it's just to understand that there's two levels of electronics. One is that analog, which is your adjusting voltages up and down, which is your old electronics, and that uses capacitors, resistors, inductors, and valves, and transformers. And then modern electronics, your digital electronics, is really just transistors, and I would like to include in there that crystal. Now, so with analog electronics, again, just getting back into it, there is some clever circuits that were quite genius and fundamental to analog and things, and that is what's called an oscillating circuit. So that's sort of 101 when you learn electronic theory, and it's good to know it. But it's, again, the same components, but they're put together in an interesting way that give us lots of cool things. And that is when you get a capacitor, which I told you about, which is charges and discharges. You put a wire between that two and an inductor, okay, which I told you was. You carry the wire on. Normally use what's called a resistor, just to keep the electricity not from burning out. And you put that wire, you run that wire, say you put a light bulb as well on the circuitry, and you take the wire and then you put it to a battery, okay? 12-volt battery, okay. So, those three components in a loop, an inductor, capacitor, resistor, that will give you what's called an oscillating circuit. So not too dissimilar to the crystal, but this is the early days. This is the analog version, if you will. And it's not perfect, and it does a different thing. It's effectively makes the electricity flow through one way and then flow back the other way. Huh? Yeah, it does. And then it flows through one way and then back the other way. Wow. And so what you have here is, imagine sort of, if you will, you know, as a kid, you've got your little car that goes around a track in your bedroom, let's say. And what it's almost doing, let's say it's going in a loop, the little car. So the car goes around the loop. Oh, it gets to the end of the course and then goes back the other way. And just keeps doing this infinitum. And so that's called an oscillating circuit. The electrons are running all the way through it one way, and then they run all the way back. And in fact, it does it as a sine wave. It does it as a consistent. So it doesn't just. So in other words, it runs, starts running really fast through the circuit, and it starts to slow down, and then it speeds up and up and up, and then goes down again, and so that it becomes, a sine wave of a circuit, unlike your crystal, which is just on and off. This is more of a rounded thing. Right, so these are on oscillating circuit. Now that is your bread and butter. That's anyone that does analog electronics, that's what's your bread and butter of many things, is this concept of electricity going all the way through and then all the way back and all the way through and all the way back. Has a sine wave. All right. And depending on the nature of the capacitor and the inductor, that oscillation happens, let's say, 40 times a second or 500 times a second. Or, here's a hint, when you're tuned into my lovely radio channel, 104.6 FM, what that really means is 104.6 kilohertz for New Zealand radio. And so your little inductor in your radio right now, the oscillating circuit is actually, that's the frequency it's running at. No, 4.6 megahertz. So let's see if I can work that into seconds. So in other words, every second, that little loop, there's a little circuitry in your radio right now, and the electricity is going through it and then back through it, 104.6 times a second. Isn't that cool? And that's why you can tune into me. So that's where we get your FM, and that's where you get your, when you say 104.6, it's just the frequency, and then you have that little analog circuitry you can tune in. Yeah, so that's your oscillating circuit. Now, just going back into your capacitor, I didn't really explain the capacitor well enough to you before. Okay, so I think it's pretty obvious what a resistor is to most people. You know, it's just something that doesn't like electricity. That's fine. A capacitor, I said, charges electricity. So how does it do this, and what's some unique property about it? So all it does, and I think most of us have heard this and we get almost bored, is it uses two big flat pieces of sheet metal. Okay? So a lot of primary school teachers will do this in their science class. You get a big roll of aluminium foil from your kitchen drawer. You roll it onto the bench. Do this at home if you're ready to be bored in COVID. And then you get another roll of your Glad wrap, and you place it on top of the first layer of aluminium foil. And then you get another roll of aluminium, and you roll that along the top. So you've got a sandwich. Okay, so the plastic stops the electricity from passing between those two plates. Now, if you put a wire between those two aluminium foils and a battery, and then, let's say, a bulb, so you effectively turn electricity on to those two metal plates, the electrons will run outside out of the battery one way, and they all start culminating on the surface of one of those plates. And as they start to collect on that plate, they start to... They want to jump through the plastic, but they can't. So let's say the electrons are all cultivating. The other plate, because it... you know, nature of atomic theory has a whole lot of atoms, let's say aluminium atoms, all those electrons will go, hang on, there's too many electrons coming too close to me, I will run away as fast as I can to the battery, and that plate then becomes positively charged. So then you have one plate is positive, one plate is negative, and because it's such a long, flat piece of steel, or aluminium in this case, you end up with a voltage difference, or one plate has got shitloads of electronics and one plate has hardly any. And therefore, if you quickly pull the battery off that, pull the wires off, the electrons didn't have quite a, you know, they've got nowhere to go, bang, and you've left this voltage difference on the plate, and you go, ha-ha, there you go, and now you have what's called a charge. So it's sort of a primitive battery, if you will. You've got one plate with all these electrons and the other plate with no electrons, plastic in between, pull the wires off. Now what happens if you were to join those, let's say you were to sort of puncture a hole through the plastic and put a piece of wire through, bang, all those electrons want to quickly get balance each other out, and you'd short it, you know, and this happens, capacitors sort of blow up. But what you're better to do is put that wire back through a bulb or a light bulb, and then those electrons go, oh, okay, so there was a lot of me on one side, and there's no electrons on the other side, so I'm going to run all the way through this bulb, and I'm going to pass through the bulb, heat up the filament and make it glow, and then I'm going to go all the way back to the other side of the plate, and I'll do that for a few seconds, let's say 5 seconds, until the plate becomes stable again. So that's capacitor, people. And if you were to take that, this is a clever bloody thing about these modern manufacturers these days. If you were to take that aluminium foil from your kitchen and then you were to make it, let's say, 300 rolls of aluminium all along the kitchen floor, keep rolling and rolling and rolling, and then you were to roll it up really tightly and stick it inside a paper cup and then compress it down to the size of a pencil, smaller than a pencil head, the tip of a pencil. Yeah, even smaller than that is pretty much what a modern capacitor is in your in modern electronics. So, you know, maybe half a kilometer, not quite, but, you know, hundreds and hundreds of meters of say your aluminium plate all rolled down, squeezed, compressed, and stuck inside. I'm trying to think of a small thing. I don't know. Your pencil cap. You know, the cap on your pen. Yep, all rolled down, stuck in the cap of your pen. Bang, that's your capacitor. And most electronics have like maybe 1,000 of those. Some of them so small you can't even see them. So, you know, come on, New Zealand, we got to really... This is the nature of how amazing this engineering is. You know, this is big-time stuff. We're going to compete. And so it's got to be down in there, tiny little thing, literally end of a... sometimes the size of a pinhead, but that's a smaller capacitor. And anyway, that capacitor, to deviating off subject, in conjunction with your inductor, that makes your oscillating circuit. Yeah, and I'm just going to get the frequency again. Megahertz. just good old Google calculator. So, wow. Yeah, so it's even more, 700,000. So 70 megahertz is 70,000. Yeah, that's right. So 70,000 cycles a second. Yeah. That's cool. I'm just working out what how many oscillations are happening in your radio right now. Okay, so that's your oscillating circuitry. Now, if you use that oscillating circuitry in conjunction with other oscillating circuitry, you can tune in your radio to a frequency, or you can even broadcast. And that's pretty much your bread and butter of your electronics, of your analog theory. And again, just hopefully you sort of understood that there's two worlds, one's analog, one's digital. I will go into how such a simple thing as a transistor in the digital circuitry can be used in such brilliant combinations to make such an incredible thing as a computer. And it almost sounds impossible. Think of it as literally Gordon Ramsay gets, a dead fish head and a bottle of milk, and he can make any meal in the world with two ingredients. So just with that transistor and a crystal gives us almost all modern computers, and I will go into that probably next time, how you can use those transistors. But right now was the theory of them. Now, I might as well just quickly tell you the principle of the transistor again. I'm going to do a whole show on the transistor. But just to remember that effectively power in one side allows power to flow through. It actually is a area of quantum physics, which we'll do a whole theory on, for how that works. It's quantum physics. It literally is a clever thing called it creates what's called electron holes, and it's pretty cool how a transistor works. So we'll go straight into that, the deep thing. I'm just going to quickly work out the megahertz of this radio channel, sorry. Okay, so it's megahertz. Good. Okay. So that means that... So you know how we all tune into our favourite radio channels, 104.6, Planet Audio on a Saturday morning. Okay, so we think of these as numbers. Let's say we know George FM, 96.6 FM. Let's say we listen to Hararaki. I think that was 99 FM. So these numbers, guys, and this is how far we're removed, what they are is literally frequencies in megahertz. And so it's megahertz. In other words, 104.6 is literally 104.6. Hang on, how are we doing this? 104.6 thousand. got myself mixed up. Let's just say a normal frequency like 88. So 88 FM would be effectively 88,000 cycles of that oscillating circuit a second. There you go. And with that, you get... the ability to tune in and all the magical things, and like I say, so that's pretty much hopefully giving you a crash course into electronics. It's pretty exciting. The magic really is how they all put together in such genius ways to make such an array of the circuitry that we use. But the principles are always the same right at the bottom there. And pretty much, unfortunately, I've run out of time, like I always do. There's so much to tell you all. But yeah, have some fun. And again, I think I've told you before, if you are interested in sort of, gadgetry electronics, then Arduino, which is the open source electronics, uses the best of analog circuitry and digital circuitry to make almost the bread and butter of anything you want. And yeah, that's how it works. I might do a show include next time on what's called sensors, and that's things that can sense real world things like temperature, but it's still the same stuff. And yeah, I don't think I've got much more time, so hopefully you have some fun with that. You know, these things sometimes are just a catalyst for you to go and start learning a bit on the internet, see what's going on, make some circuits, think about these things, and think about this. We are at the beginning of the electronics age. A lot of us still think that it's been there, done that, but it's not. So I really want people to start realizing this is a brand new world. It really was only invented, you know, 80 years ago. So don't feel that, you know, the smarts have been done. Have some fun. Be radical. Be crazy. Send me an email. Chat at update.chat. Go to my website, update.chat. And if you've got some subjects you want me to get into, yeah, just leave a message on that website. And have some fun, guys. So, yeah, Anthony Blomfield, you've been awesome.